This week, the Supreme Court agreed to hear two cases challenging the use of affirmative action by the University of Michigan. Many colleges have similar policies which are used to help minority students and ensure racial diversity. But commentator Frank DeFord says the students who may benefit most from affirmative action are athletes.
It's generally accepted that when it comes to affirmative action and college acceptance, the group that receives the most favored treatment is the children of faculty. Then comes athletes, then legacies, children of alumni, then minorities. Oh, it may not be in exactly that order at all colleges, but that's the pattern. Athletes, however, probably profit most overall, not only because they're given special admissions preference, but because then so many of them also receive scholarships, even if their parents can afford full tuition. This is worth our being reminded because, of course, the Supreme Court has agreed to review the Bakke decision of 1978, which upheld the right of universities to consider race in making admissions decisions. Let us then jump ahead to next June, when the new decision may be handed down. If the High Court rules that applicants are discriminated against because of race, could we not expect someone to contest the similar favoritism that is applied to athletes at state universities? Why should a student with A grades and high SATs be denied admission when a football player with low class standing and abysmal SATs is accepted? Is this not unfair? Is this not the stuff of a civil suit? Colleges have always maintained, and I certainly agree, that grades should never be the single factor in selecting a class. If you have the chance to enroll, say, the finest young violinist in the nation, surely that talent should count for more than a few SAT points. As admissions officers are fond of saying, they are not looking for a well-rounded person, but a well-rounded class. But isn't it difficult to justify turning down a devoted A student while accepting a D student just because he's 7 feet tall and can rebound? At what point does a singular athletic talent trump indisputable academic superiority? Now, at the same time that the Supreme Court is revisiting the matter of affirmative action, a challenge is being mounted before the Department of Education to reconsider Title IX, the law which has given such benefit to women's athletics. Male critics of Title IX, however, always refuse to see the elephant in the room, athletic scholarships. If student athletes, so-called, were not granted scholarships ipso facto, huge sums of money could be freed up so that more sports, for men and women, could be funded. Is the point of college athletics to provide a paid job, and that's what an athletic scholarship amounts to, for a few students, or to provide a greater opportunity for sports, for exercise, for competition, for many more? The great violin player isn't going to get a free ride just because she has an extracurricular talent. Why should a great hockey player? For decades now, we have simply accepted the premise that an athlete deserves special consideration in the admissions process, and moreover, that an athlete is due a financial bonus that other students with special talents don't receive. Even if there is no lawsuit that challenges this accepted wisdom, isn't it perhaps time that we at least agreed to debate the proposition? Are athletes deserving of extreme affirmative action? And can across-the-board athletic scholarships be justified when the costs thereof mean that fewer sports will field fewer teams with fewer students playing sports? The issue is not Title IX, it's athletic entitlement.
The comments of Frank DeFord. His latest novel is An American Summer. He joins us each Wednesday from member station WSHU in Fairfield, Connecticut.